Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. In this week's episode, we break down the Ole Miss Rebels, and we'll talk to Davis Potter of the Oxford Eagle, who will take a peek in on that team and let us know what all is going on out there with that quarterback situation. We'll also talk to Andrew Hancock, a former A&M student who has turned into a very well-renowned photographer around the country, who was embedded with the Chicago Cubs, the World Series champion Chicago Cubs, and was there at that historic Game 7 photographing for ESPN, so we'll get his take on that. We'll break down Ole Miss, and we'll pick some college football games before it's all said and done, but before we do that, I need to bring in the guy who is apparently my boss. That is Zach Taylor.
We got ladies walking around that work here thinking apparently you're my intern, so we've got that going
on. I am older than you, so
yeah.
We have this, you know, the movie The Intern going on here.
Yeah, a little Bobby De Niro. Hey, no, I'm the intern. I don't know. Forget it, man. Forget it. It's been a loopy week. It's a loopy day. So yeah.
You know, a lot of people up late.
We've got that going on for us, as well as Davis Potter, who is just as important. He's
basically
the president over there at the Oxford Eagle.
Well, and just wait till we get to talking to Andrew Hancock, because he's a cool dude. He's a guy that I don't know if y'all were watching the World Series, but there was a guy on the field after the game, photographer who had that Texas A&M football hat on backwards and blew up the internet with everyone all excited about A&M being represented at this historic Game 7 of the World Series, and that was the man with the hat. He had all kinds of cool conversations with Tyler Nyquin, who was with the Cleveland Indians and a former A&M guy, and all kinds of fun experience. He was embedded there from June on after the All-Star break, so he really got to know a lot of those guys, and a pretty cool story. So you got to keep listening for that.
Yeah, and believe it or not, that World Series had a lot of Texas ties. Because you had guys like Corey Kluber, who's a Coppell native.
Right.
Jake Arrieta, who is a Plano native. And Josh Tomlin, who's from White House.
Right.
East Texas. So.
Well, then you got Ben Zobrist, who was a DBU alum.
Right, exactly. He's a Patriot. So, there were a lot of Texas ties to that World Series. But we will talk about that later. Obviously, a big football game this weekend, though. Between Texas A&M.
McQueen. Connor McQueen?
What?
He's not going to get to play because Nick Starkle is going to be the backup.
Hey, Sumlin said maybe. He wasn't for sure about that. Frankly, I think Connor McQueen, now that he didn't win the presidential election, which we all hoped he would, I think that he deserves his shot. I think it's time to bring in McQueen and get it done.
Well,
Lightning McQueen.
I think that is the case if they, you know, lose
or Red
two
Lightning.
Games,
Red
or
Lightning McQueen.
Maybe throw him out there against UTSA.
Yeah, well, that very well might be an option too. But yeah, we were talking with Kevin Sumlin yesterday at the press conference, and he said that burning Nick Starkle's red shirt could be a possibility. Of course, Jake Hubenak, depending on if he gets hurt, and this is where you kind of get into some muddy waters as well. Constituting burning a red shirt is if he takes the field and takes a snap, correct?
Yeah, well,
it depends, right?
Because there's a minimum amount of snaps. I mean, I think he actually could see the field and still possibly get a red shirt.
Keep his red shirt?
Now you put me on the spot. There's different rules between your red shirt and a medical red shirt.
Right, exactly.
And so I'm thinking of a medical red shirt. I think if he sees the field, he burns his normal red shirt.
Okay.
There's no real reason why that could be possible.
And look, in the way that Texas A&M has gone through quarterbacks over the past several seasons, you know, Nick Starkle's only going to be here for 2 years anyways, apparently, before he either transfers or goes to the NFL or something. So, it'll be kind of strange when Texas A&M actually has a quarterback. Jake Kubanek, I think, will be the longest-termed QB here for a long time. Granted, Johnny Manziel was a redshirt freshman or a redshirt sophomore his final year. But either way, it's presenting an interesting dynamic for this game because both of these teams have suffered big-time injuries at quarterback. For Texas A&M, it was Trevor Knight. For Ole Miss, it was Chad Kelly. But when you look at this, overall seasons, Texas A&M is having a better one at 7-2 versus 4-5 for Ole Miss. I think it's been a pretty much a dud so far for the Rebels. But this quarterback situation, I think A&M has the upper hand on it as well, because a lot of unproven players behind Chad Kelly, who had been such an integral part of that Ole Miss offense, which has been very good this year. A lot of people expected it would, and that's really hurting them, going to hurt them, I think, missing Chad Kelly. And as big as Trevor Knight has been, not saying that, I don't want to minimize what he's done. He's been huge. But I think having a guy like Jake Hubenek, who has played meaningful time, who has been successful, who is a junior transfer, a guy who's been in football for a very long time, I think that bodes better for the Aggies in that quarterback situation. What say you? Got him. I stumped you.
Yeah, I think that... What was the question again?
I was talking about the quarterback situation and how I think when you look at it from the outside looking in, it seems like the injuries that have occurred to the starters at Texas A&M is in better shape, because you have a guy like Jake Hubenek who has been proven and who has experienced time, as opposed to either Jason Pellerin or Shea Patterson behind Chad Kelly. Chad Kelly's taken most of the meaningful snaps this year.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's something that I talked about on our little Periscope yesterday with Robert Cessna, and I kind of put it in my story yesterday. Don't be surprised if A&M's pass offense improves with Jake Hubenek. He really had made some really good passes against Mississippi State. Now, it was, again, Mississippi State, a team that A&M should have beaten, but I mean, that 54-yard touchdown to Christian Kirk in the fourth quarter, we haven't seen a better pass from an A&M quarterback this season than that one. And so I think if the offensive line can give him some time and he gets, you know, more first-team reps and the system may be a little bit, or the play calling may be a little bit more tailored for him, they might be really a decently strong passing offense where they kind of really weren't with Trevor Knight.
And we've talked about this. We talked about it before the bowl game last year. Of course, you weren't here yet, but it was a great topic of discussion about Jake Hubenek, who is going to be starting, a guy who basically came from nowhere. He was a transfer from Blinn and had very good numbers at Blinn Junior College. In the 9 games that he had played overall, had thrown for over 4,000 yards to go along with 41 touchdowns, I believe, compared to 11 interceptions. So he's a guy, and by the way, it was at a 65% completion rate. So a guy, 47 touchdowns, excuse me. Jake Hubenek is a good passer, mm-hmm. and he's struggled at times. And you looked at Louisville last year, and you almost want to give A&M a bit of a pass because you've seen just how good Louisville is this season. And Lamar Jackson overall. And so right. When you look at that loss to Louisville last year in the Music City Bowl, it might not be all that bad. Louisville was a pretty dang good team, still are. But Jake Hubenek showed some flashes of what he can really be. And also I saw a statistic as well that when he was getting blitzed, because his whole problem, right, is that he's not as mobile, he can't avoid the pass rush as well as Trevor Knight can, right? Well, apparently when he was being blitzed against Mississippi State, he was 5 for 5 with 2 touchdowns.
That makes sense.
So if you're Ole Miss and you're thinking we've got to contain him in the pocket, we have to get the edge rush on him, we have to be able to bring the house at times for this Landshark defense, which isn't as Landsharky as it used to be, then we can force him to make bad throws. But the thing is that Jake Hubenek can make good throws out of the pocket. Trevor right. Knight cannot at times.
Right. And to that point, Noel Mazzoni said that, you know, the crux of a lot of this offense with Trevor Knight was a run pass option, the ability to kind of run that traditional zone read, and then Trevor Knight, if he pulls the ball, then has the option either to run it himself or to make a pass. And I think the thing that opened up the most for A&M this year, as it's been evident, is Trevor Knight being able to run the ball. Well, it might turn a little bit into a running back run pass option where Jake Hubenek, if he pulls the ball, will have several options to dish the ball out with the pass instead of running it himself and kind of tailor it that way. So that's a pretty easy way to help combat the blitz or combat pressure if you fake the handoff, throw it to the blitz. You know, maybe he's a smart guy. He's been around, kind of hot route a route to the blitz, make that read and throw to where the team's blitzing, and I think he has the intelligence and the arm to do that.
And talking about Jake Kubenek and his inability to run, and Kevin Sumlin had actually said, look, he's not a 4-5 guy like Trevor Knight is. Well, according to Next College Student Athlete, it's a website, kind of a recruiting website, they say that he ran a 4.58 in the 40. Now, does that translate into him being a good running quarterback? No, it doesn't. But what I'm saying is, it's not as if the guy can't run. And I think we saw that at times against Mississippi State, he wasn't great at it, but he can move out of the pocket. He's not immobile.
If they're at third and five, third and short, and the pocket opens up in front of him a little bit, he's going to be able to pick up the first down. This isn't, you know, just some big brooding kind of quarterback, big lunky quarterback. This is a guy who he'll pick it up. And especially if they do run some zone read and the defensive end or whatever bites, he can pick up 4 or 5 yards, you know, and get the job done. He kind of reminds me in his attributes of like a young Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton was a guy who wasn't fast, but was smart enough to execute the zone read option when he was sophomore, junior, in college, and was mm-hmm. able to pick up a first down if he ran the play right. I think that's kind of what we get with Jake Kubenek. But another guy I want to talk a little bit about is Nick Starkel, a guy that if Jake Kubenek throws up a dud, or if he is a guy that gets, you know, heaven forbid, gets hurt in the next couple games, it looks like Nick Starkel's the guy that they're going to give the nod to over Connor McQueen. And I talked to Damon Sayles, who's the Bleacher Report national recruiting analyst, a guy who followed Nick Starkel in his high school, and he said that Starkel and Mazzoni are really tight. Starkel has bought into Mazzoni's system even when Mazzoni was at UCLA. And so he will be truly a product of part of that system. He's a sponge. He's really smart. He probably would be able to pick up this offense in just the little bit amount of time he's been able to be in it. And he says he has a infectious personality, and he would be able to be a vocal leader. He'd be a guy that can step into the huddle and demand the respect of the guys around him, even as a true freshman. And so that's pretty high praise for a guy that could step in. You know, you always worry about if there is a true freshman stepping into that position, will the guys in the huddle around him respect him? And it's Sayles seems to believe that wouldn't be even be in question.
No, and I agree. And when you look at this team overall, I think this has been a real driving point. And it seems like this year they're not just saying it, that this team has been very close. And I think a lot of credit for that has to go to Trevor Knight and the quarterbacks. When you look at how close that group is and everything that they've done, and, you know, you talk about the presidential election thing that they put on the other day, you know, they're having fun and they are close-knit. And I don't think that that's been the case between the quarterbacks for the past few seasons at Texas A&M. And so I think that this team does have a unity that past teams have not. However, you've got to be able to go out and you've got to be able to show it on the field. And against Mississippi State, they just didn't do it. I think Nick Starkel probably has the ear of his teammates. I think that he has those leadership qualities, but again, he's still a true freshman and he's still a young guy. And you wonder how willing he is. It's one thing to be kind of hanging back behind guys like Trevor Knight and Jake Kubenek and even Connor McQueen and be hanging out in that quarterback room. It's another thing to take hold of that quarterback room and the team itself and the offense. So could he do that? Could he be the future this season? I can't see it. I still think that Jake Kubenek is going to be the guy. But as you said, worst comes to worst, then Nick Starkel will be suiting up and taking the field for the Aggies. But I think Jake Kubenek will be just fine going sure. The rest of the way.
Sure. Just a couple scattershoot notes before we pass this along to our man from the Oxford Eagle, Davis Potter. We have two other big injuries that came out. Noah Ellis, defensive back, out for the year with just what sounded like a gruesome injury, like a separated muscle in his upper leg.
Yeah, a torn upper muscle.
Oh, and that just sounds miserable. So speedy recovery to him. But also offensive lineman Connor Lanfear, who tore some ligaments in his right knee, needs surgery, and he'll be done for the year as well. Now, the offensive line, it doesn't seem like it might be in too much trouble because he's a guy that actually has, in the past couple weeks, has gotten shuffled out a little bit in favor of some different looks and some different formations. So they're prepared to move on without him being out there. But that is just kind of the situation there. Then, of course, because they have the opportunity to possibly play this week, no updates on the injuries to Priest Willis or Myles Garrett.
And so, they were missing Priest Willis last week because Dominic Capers-Smith got burned a bunch.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. So, a lot on the injury front with A&M, but there's also a lot on the injury front from Ole Miss. And we're going to ask Davis Potter of the Oxford Eagle about that. Who exactly will be the quarterback for the Rebels this week? We'll get into that next.
Back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. Zach Taylor alongside Travis L. Brown. It is Ole Miss week as Texas A&M is gearing up to take on the Rebels, and it should be a good one at Kyle Field. And joining us from the Oxford Eagle is the one, the only Davis Potter. And I guess we've got a fight on our hands, right? Because we've got the Bryan College Station Eagle versus the Oxford Eagle. There can only be one.
The battle for the ultimate eagle.
The battle for the ultimate eagle. Even though, when did the paper there go start in circulation, Davis?
Oh, man, I have no idea.
Yeah, I was supposed to say, don't ask me that question either.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
I thought that was part of the...
Yeah, long time before I got here. I've been here about 3 years. So
oh, okay.
Before that.
I was about to say, Travis has been at the Eagle here for less than that, but I figured that was probably the part of the test that you had to go through before they hired you, but I wasn't for sure. So anyways, as I talked about, there is going to be a big matchup this weekend here in Texas at College Station against Texas A&M and Ole Miss. Obviously, the first thing that jumps out at you about this matchup is the quarterback situation for both teams, because they look to be without Chad Kelly. He's going to be gone for the entire year. His collegiate career is done, and Trevor Knight's regular season at best is done, if not his entire collegiate career. So both of these teams are going to be coming in with a quarterback situation that's a bit shaky. That seems like a big thing that stands out to me right off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, it may just come down actually to which defense can play better, which is kind of ironic considering Ole Miss has been terrible pretty much all year. So, whoever can maybe play, get a stop here or there, force a turnover and maybe get some points from their defense and from some special teams. Because obviously these offenses are going to be pared down. I mean, Texas A&M isn't going to ask their backup to run everything Trevor Knight was doing, and Ole Miss isn't going to ask either freshman quarterback, whoever ends up getting most of the snaps, to run everything that Chad Kelly was doing. So, it may be a little more low scoring and just see which side breaks first.
Yeah, any indication on which way they might be leaning, on which quarterback they will go to, and kind of some of the strengths of either of those guys?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'll say I don't know. I mean, nobody technically knows, but Shea Patterson is a five-star freshman who a lot of fans now want to see play. They've had him in line for a red shirt all year because you're not going to play over Chad Kelly, so what's the point? But Tuesdays are the days they usually open up the media for practice viewing. They closed it yesterday, and they didn't make any offensive players or coaches available for interviews after last night's practice. So, read into that what you want to. I don't know. It's kind of strange because this is a 4-5 Ole Miss team. You're not playing for a championship at this point, and I don't know what secrets you would be hiding, because the other guy in the mix that has kind of been somewhat forgotten is Jason Peller, and the redshirt freshman who's been Chad Kelly's backup all year. But I think their skill sets are very similar. Pellering is more, can run it. He's more of a runner. They've used him mainly as a runner this year in some of their jumbo packages in the red zone. The closer they get to the end zone. So he gives them that element. But as far as, Jason Pellerin's got a pretty good arm. obviously he hasn't been asked to throw a whole lot this year, but other than Pellerin being a running threat, he is a little bit bigger guy. He's the biggest quarterback they have on the roster. He goes about 6'4", 230. So, but they both have pretty good arms, and they're both pretty mobile in the pocket. If they're going to play Shea Patterson, I don't understand why you just don't come out and say, hey, look, he's our guy. He's going to be our guy moving forward. This is what we're going to do. We're just going to start him, and this is it. We're playing him. Because their skill set is very – I don't really know what they would be hiding from A&M in terms of skill set or something, maybe that Patterson could do that Pellerin couldn't do, because I think they can do a lot of the same things. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think that there's obviously a little gamesmanship going on here, but, I would not expect a word to leak out from Ole Miss until they try to quarterback out on the field Saturday night.
Visiting with Davis Potter of the Oxford Eagle in preparation for Ole Miss Week. Again, the Aggies and Rebels squaring off at Kyle Field this Saturday. And talking about Shea Patterson and Jason Pellerin having very similar attributes and skill sets, you talked about Pellerin being more of a runner, though, and being a bigger guy. And when you are Hugh Freeze, as talented as Shea Patterson is, as much as he looks like he's going to be the future for the Rebels, you also look at last week and see what Nick Fitzgerald, who has a very similar body type as Jason Pellerin, a big guy, can run with the ball. And as you talked about, Pellerin doesn't have too bad of an arm. And see what he did against the Aggie defense last week. That has to be a little intriguing if you're Hugh Freeze thinking, well, maybe Pellerin's got a shot at beating them at home.
Sure. And I think another thing some people aren't thinking about is, as much as Shea Patterson's being hyped, I don't know if he is the best quarterback on their roster right now, if he gives them the best chance to win right now, because, look, I mean, he's a true freshman. He was an early enrollee, but he's been in the playbook, yes, less than a year. Jason Pellerin is a redshirt freshman, so he's basically been in the playbook as long as Chad Kelly was in the playbook, because Chad Kelly was the junior college guy that came in 2014, or 15, excuse me, with Jason Pellerin. So, he's been in the playbook longer. He probably has a better feel and idea of what's going on. And, yeah, I mean, if you're Jason Pellerin, you've got to be thinking, man, if I don't get my shot now, I mean, when am I going to get it? Because, look, Shea Patterson is the future. Everybody knows that. But, if you're in Jason Pellerin's shoes, you've got to feel like, man, I've got to get my chance now, or I'm probably not going to get it. And, it'd be interesting to kind of, see what his mindset is. And, he said after the game Saturday that, he's ready to go and he feels comfortable in the playbook. And, yeah, he may give almost the best chance to win right now, especially going, like you said, against that A&M defense that struggled with kind of the dual threat guys and the quarterbacks that are mobile and can hurt you with their feet. So, it's going to be interesting to see what Ole Miss does there.
Is there much pressure or much conversation talking about trying to get that first win on the road?
I just think they need a win. It doesn't matter where it is. I mean, especially against an SEC team. Last time they haven't gotten an SEC win in over a month. They beat Georgia pretty handily back at the end of September, and that's the only SEC win they've got. So, with their defensive struggles, and obviously now their quarterback situation, I mean, I think they're just looking for anything. They're looking to get a win no matter how they get it. They have talked about how now, with all this, I mean, this was a preseason top 15 team that, talked in the preseason so heavily about competing for championships, and, that was basically gone at, the beginning, middle of October. So they have talked about now just trying to win. Go 1-0 every week and reach a bowl game. And, I think they just want to do that however means necessary.
You spoke about Ole Miss's defense. That's something that's really been a strong point of theirs. Obviously, the defensive line with Nwachukwu. I mean, those guys have been very, very good. And then now with this year coming in, giving up over 30 points per game, the rushing defense has still been pretty solid. But what are things like after the Kimdichie brothers have left, and how are things adjusting defensively for the Rebels?
Well, actually, the run defense has been pretty bad all year. I mean, I mean, they're 118th, 17th. The last time I checked the stats, they were 118th nationally against the run. Their defensive line has not played, has not been what they thought it would be, but their linebacker situation is just a mess. I mean, some of the recruiting misses that they've had in recent years are really starting to show up. You know, they've had to bring in a lot of junior college and graduate transfers that, you know, to kind of be band-aids for their problem there. And I mean, it's just been a musical chairs there. I mean, that they started almost a different linebacker combination every game. That's, you know, which has been some of those junior college guys and grad transfers. Now they're even, some of that just hasn't panned out, and now they're even trying some walk-ons, and it's just been a mess. I mean, it's a combination of you know, run sets and not being in the right place, but it's also, I mean, it's a talent issue too. I mean, that's something that they won't be able to fix this year. I mean, you got to go out and you got to get better players. Quite honestly, but both you know, in the second and third level of their defense, their secondary might not be okay. That they're young, but they recruited some pretty good players, some pretty highly sought after prospects back there in the secondary. But you know, they're kind of going, they're just going through the growing pains that come with being young and playing at this level. And you know, it's something that they're not going to be able to fix this year. And I mean, I would expect A&M, who's been a lot better running team this year and had a lot more balance, to just try to you know, run it unless Ole Miss can stop them. I know Trevor Knight obviously was a big part of that with his run game, and that'll be gone. But you know, I would just expect A&M to try to run it and see if Ole Miss can stop them before they really try to do anything else.
I'm visiting with Davis Potter of the Oxford Eagle, and Davis, maybe one other thing that you feel really stands out to you in this matchup. Something that you feel is going to be important when it finally comes down to it?
The offensive line holding up against A&M pass rush. And I don't know if Myles Garrett's going to play, but I know they have Hall at the other end spot. They could really get after the quarterback. And this is offensive line that's an Ole Miss offensive line is just decimated by injuries right now. I mean, they've got a guard playing center. They've got two freshmen starting at the tackle spots. You know, they're hopeful to get some guys back, but you know, some of those guys aren't going to come back. I mean, I think that's just kind of wishful thinking, you know, just hoping that they can make enough progress. But they're pretty banged up on there with some knee injuries and some ankles, and those things just take time to heal. And you know, almost just you don't have that time at this point of the season. And so it's going to be interesting to see if that offensive line, patchwork offensive line, I should say, can hold up against that A&M defensive front. Because if they can't, you're already playing a young quarterback, and that young quarterback's having to run for his life back there. You know, it could be a long night for this Ole Miss offense.
Davis Potter of the Oxford Eagle coming on and joining us on My Aggie Nation. Davis, thank you so very much for your time. Really do appreciate it. And hopefully, are we going to be seeing you this week? Are you coming in for the game?
Yeah, I'll be there. I'm flying out Friday afternoon.
Oh, fantastic. I have to get together and have a beer. Really do appreciate it, Davis. Thanks.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, guys, going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will keep this bad boy rolling again. You're listening to the My Aggie Nation podcast.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast, and we have a special treat here. We have a former Aggie student who is out there doing some big things in the world. He's a photographer, and he's had stuff out there in all kinds of great publications like Sports Illustrated, like the Players Tribune.
Working for a big deal.
He's kind of a big deal, and he also worked for ESPN covering the Cubs through this historic season, including that World Series, and including that big Game 7 win. You might have seen him on TV. He was wearing a Texas A&M football hat backwards, as he typically does. It's Andrew Hancock. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us here for this episode. And just how was that experience? I mean, when you look back on it, of course you don't know how historic and how important it's going to be while it's going on. But when you look back at it now, you know, about a week removed from it all? What is the emotions and what is the thought processes about what you got to experience?
Well, for starters, guys, thanks for having me on. I look forward to visiting with you. Glad to be here. But it was certainly a trip. And early on, I moved up to Indiana after I graduated from A&M back in 2003, and I kind of was a product of the WGN effect. I grew up in Midland, Texas, and get home in the afternoons from school, and we had WGN, so I'd be able to be watching cartoons or playing video games, and I happened to always want to be watching baseball. So I grew up watching Ryan Sandberg and Andre Dawson, and listening to Harry Carey. So for me, it was cool to get to spend so much time at Wrigley this year. And being familiar with the history of the team, the gravity of the potential of the situation was certainly not lost on me early on, because it was something that's openly talked about, especially in the current regime of the Cubs, of how long it'd been and putting an end to all that. So from early on, I knew that was the team's goal. I also knew that was their expectations. And so early on, that was just kind of one of the things that I keyed in on in my coverage, which spanned about 4 months and 40 games, beginning just before the All-Star break. But you could tell the weight getting a little heavier on the shoulders, not necessarily as the season progressed, but they still finished with 103 wins, but especially when it got into the postseason. You could tell that there was a little more anxiety than you saw, but any time that you saw the guys being really loose and joking around and stuff like that, you knew that the potential for something incredibly special to happen was certainly in play. And I think that when they got that win at Wrigley, I think that's when everything really started to change for them. And because I think the first two games back in Wrigley, games 3 and 4, I think there was a lot more stress than probably they were anticipating. They were a little bit stiffer in terms of how you see them play. They were locked in, but they just you could tell they were trying to kind of force things, and they weren't kind of playing the game that I'd seen them play all through the regular season. But after they got that win in 5, whenever John Lester started, I think that was kind of the key that kind of got them going. And then to start the 6th game, whenever Ben Zobrist had that collision with the plate, I think that was kind of the them punching the history, and to an extent the Indians right in the mouth, and saying, this is our time, let's go. And I think that's whenever I really saw a big change in the team. And at that point, you start really starting to realize the history that's at stake and what the potential is, and sure enough, they capitalized on it.
Sure. Before we get a little bit more into that Cubs team, everything there, I think the thing that really stood out to the A&M fans listening and those that were on Twitter that night and have seen you in other things in years past is that A&M hat, just bringing A&M into the picture during this historic World Series. Saw you on TV with that. I talked to you about a little bit earlier before with the story I did on you, and know that is A&M's not only an important part of who you are today, but you like to kind of celebrate that in some of the work you did. Talk a little bit about, or tell me a little bit about the importance of A&M, and also what kind of got you started in wearing hats and stuff like that when you're at these big games.
I'm an Aggie through and through, and it's something that I know that I wouldn't be where I'm at now if it wasn't for the education I received at A&M. I'm a journalism major. But A&M just kind of as a person and a professional just kind of really helped mold me into who I am, and I'm very thankful for that. And being kind of, I call it, an exile from Texas since 2003, everybody knows that Texans are proud folks, and especially for those of us that are in even if it's self-imposed exile, we're definitely still proud Texans regardless of where we're living, and it's especially true for Aggies. And so I always wear my ring, but oftentimes they'll catch me in a hat or a shirt or something like that. I wear the colors and the logo with pride. And it's fun whenever I'm at different events, because you never know when you're going to run across an Aggie. I'm the one that Von Miller noticed my ring on the field after the Super Bowl whenever he was MVP, and I had a nice little visit with him. So you never know when it's a player you might run into, or someone in the stands, which I had multiple fans come up to me, especially in Cleveland, that were Aggies or from Texas and stuff like that. So every time I wore it, it kind of started up a conversation at some point along the lines. But I was wearing just a a maroon hat with the logo whenever I was, doing games, I think 3, 4, and 5 in Chicago. And Tyler Naquin came up to me whenever he was working out and getting loose before, I guess, I think it was game 3. And he came up and introduced himself and visited and kind of looked at the ring and all that stuff. And, we had a nice chat before he played the game. And so, you never know. And I wore the white hat whenever we took Clemson LCS, which was game 6 at Wrigley. And not to be too superstitious, but, once they were playing game 6 and 7 in Cleveland, I was like, what the hell? I said, that's the hat I've got to wear. And, wore it. And next thing you know, I'm waiting to go into the clubhouse for the champagne celebration, look down on my phone because it's been buzzing constantly while I was shooting everything on the field. And, look down and I've got 20-something texts and Twitter starting to blow up. And I was like, oh, wow, sweet. And at the time, I don't necessarily even think about it because I'm so focused on making the pictures. I don't know where video cameras are, and there's so many people, media members out there anyways, but you never know. But it's like I said, it's something I'm certainly proud of, very proud to be an Aggie. And it's fun to see A&M get exposure, and however it can, if it comes through me wearing a cap and it gets picked up on TV or something like that, great. It's something I'm certainly not going to shy away from. So
visiting with professional photographer as well as Fightin' Texas Aggie class of 2003, Andrew Hancock. Andrew, I don't think we could have written up a better game 7 in that World Series. I mean, everybody was on the edge of their seat. You talk about Tyler Naquin. Unfortunately, he was benched, but Rajay Davis in his stead had that big home run, the rain, everything. It just seemed like it was factor out just even the two teams that had not won a World Series in seemingly forever. Just the whole experience and everything around it was special. That's about the only thing you can describe it as. It was just special, and it was just different.
Absolutely. I mean, I tell you what, I'm a journalist. I started off kind of on the written side of things, and I still think I can craft a pretty strong story from time to time, but I gravitated toward the camera because I can tell my story a lot more effectively and quickly and efficiently with an image than I can with the written word. And so, for me, it was just, people ask me, how do you sum everything up with the game? I'm like, you can't. I was like, I'm at a loss for words. But I was like, but I've got, I took about 8,000 pictures throughout the course of game 7 between the cameras I had on me and 4 remote cameras that were going to capture everything. So I said, you're bound to find one that can tell the story there. If not a whole host of them. But, yeah, it was unlike anything I'd photographed. I mean, if you're just a baseball fan, even the most casual fan, I mean, you couldn't help but fall in love with it by watching that game, regardless if you didn't have any rooting interest. But it was as exciting as sports can get, just a roller coaster of emotions. I mean, the only thing that, my career, I think, that's come close to experiencing that was probably whenever I documented American Pharoah winning the Triple Crown for Sports Illustrated and at the Belmont, and that was something else. That was the one where, whenever Pharoah came around that last turn, and I'm looking straight at him leading the pack, and I'm physically shaking while I'm firing the camera, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, he's going to do it. And then, whenever Chapman, who I've done a bit of work with Chapman throughout the season, whenever he gave up that home run, and you could tell that he was gassed because he did not want to throw Davis the fastball. He kept on throwing slider after slider after slider, and I was like, he doesn't have it. And I saw David Ross look over to the dugout and, kind of looking at Madden, he kind of gestured that, Chapman didn't have it. And whenever he finally went back to the fastball, they just crushed it out of the stadium, which was, the place went nuts. I mean, it was, there's few venues over here I've ever heard erupt that furiously, and it certainly did. But at the same time, with how much time I'd spent with the Cubs all year, I'm thinking at this point, I'm like, hey, I've got to make the best pictures at this game. By far and away my goal, because that's what ESPN expects from me. But on top of that, I'm thinking, down the road, I'm like, man, if the Cubs win, I've got to do a book. I've got to do a coffee table book. And with that home run, I was like, well, there goes that. I just kind of was like, man, I'm gonna throw up watching this. But, it was just crazy. And then, when David Ross was able to get that walk and then the rain starts coming down, I was like, whoa, what's going on here? And, they went into the clubhouse, one team, and they came out an entirely another team. And what they did in the tent was incredible.
Definitely, definitely. So you mentioned to me when we were talking through the story that you kind of had a day with David Ross. What was that like, and what kind of I think he's kind of been a guy that's not only stood out because, you know, he was the veteran who announced his retirement and that whole storyline, but in the days after the win, he's kind of been one of those faces of the franchise, naturally, and faces of the win. What was he like, and what was that like on the day that you kind of got to spend with him a little bit?
And Ross is a great guy, and I liken his career to, you know, a really premier batter that can just really grind out a bat, you know, especially if he's waiting for his right pitch and just can keep fouling stuff off to stay alive. And that's kind of been Ross's career. And he's certainly made a good career of it. But he's always kind of been that journeyman catcher. But quickly this season, especially just for the impact that he brings to the clubhouse, he was not only a favorite of the players and the team, but also the fans as well. And just a lot of fun to watch, you know, with this kind of, you know, childlike enthusiasm that he brought to the game. It's just infectious. And it was fun. I would always make it a point to be at the stadium really early, just to kind of, especially working on a long-term project like this, so players and everybody kind of get familiar seeing you around and whatnot. And one day he came out with his oldest daughter and his son just to play catch, and, you know, Wrigley Field's completely empty. And I introduced myself and, you know, asking if he would like some photos, so I could take some pictures and throw them with his kids. And he's like, man, I would love that. You know, he's like, I don't have anything like this. And he's like, you know, I'm a father too. I got two little kids at home that I miss terribly being on the road as much as I am. And, you know, I know these guys do so much for so many people that nobody, you know, really gives back to them. And so this was a chance where I can kind of do some of that and give him some moments. And he's like, hey, if you ever need anything, let me know. And then the NLCS clinch, when we're on the field, I run into him and take a couple pictures of him lifting his wife off the ground, and his little kids are there. And so, you know, David, I got an idea, knowing that, you know, his last start would come during the World Series. You know, if the Cubs swept, it would obviously be game one, but if it went longer than that, it would be game five. Since he's been, you know, Lester's personal catcher since they were with the Red Sox. And so I said, hey, I'd like to follow you around and document that day for your last game. He's like, I would love to. And we were going to possibly do it twice, start off by doing it in Cleveland, but his son had the stomach bug and the baby wasn't feeling well, and so he's like, hey, I need to rest, and we push this back, we'll do it in Chicago. I said, absolutely. So showed up at his place that morning, and he's just kind of lounging around and watching you know, college football recaps with a buddy of his, and kids start getting up, and unfortunately the wife had the stomach bug, so they had the doctor coming over to give her IVs, and another kid was not feeling well, so it was kind of running through the house, but he had other family there, and just kind of, you know, see what his day was like and see just kind of how he relaxes. But also you could definitely see the point in the morning whenever he starts really getting kind of keyed up and the emotions start going, you know, knowing that this was going to be his last start. And but he was incredibly gracious to allow me in, just kind of be on closed doors and just kind of see everything that he goes through, and, you know, be so open with everything. And he's a great guy, and he carries himself the right way and does things the right way. So I think he's very deservingly one of the faces of the franchise, despite the fact he's on his way out. But I think that, you know, hopefully he enjoys some time with his family, but hopefully at some point he has the opportunity to give back to baseball, if not the Cubs, or maybe in some capacity as a broadcaster, because his knowledge of the game is certainly substantial, and he, you know, communicates himself very well. But he's just a great guy to be around, and, you know, just kind of ride with him to the game and kind of document that and just kind of see, you know, all the emotions that you go through just on a regular game, but also on what's going to be the last start of his career.
Sure, sure. Well, we touched a little bit on the post-game celebration, the locker room, and all the champagne and the story, so I'll encourage everyone listening, go to MyAggieNation.com and check out that story. You'll get a little inside look and all that stuff. But since then, there was this little thing that, you know, like a parade or something that happened in Chicago, where there were a few hundred people or something like that showed out. I think, if I remember right, you said you were there in this just enormous scene of all these people. What was that like?
I actually ended up not going.
So
the plans
okay.
were for me to go, but then there was some issues with, the credentialing not getting done in time and whatnot, but the main thing was trying to get on a couple particular buses, and I'm not sure if they just didn't get things to come through or not, but as what turned out, I ended up at home, which was much needed, since, you know, after Game 7, I didn't leave the stadium until 4:30 in the morning, and then thanks to a hotel reservation mix up, ended up having to drive about 5 hours home straight after that, so...
Man.
I was certainly exhausted, and the rest and the time home with family after being gone so much for the postseason was well received. So I just kind of went to a local spot for lunch and grabbed myself a beer and a sandwich and watched a little bit of it on TV. And so it wasn't too bad. So I didn't have any love lost or any disappointment from that, because I said, you know, if the last picture I make of the Cubs this year is while I'm drenched in champagne in the locker room, I'll still consider that a win.
Exactly. Well, in that case, then tell me, rehash a little bit and tell the listeners here, if you don't mind, a little bit about what that scene was like in the locker room with the champagne showers and everything, and just kind of what were some of those little special moments that you saw throughout bobbing and weaving through that crowd.
I don't know if it was really so much bobbing and weaving, because we were packed in there like sardines. It was, beyond shoulder to shoulder, within shoulder to shoulder. I mean, everybody's just kind of pressed together to try to get in and get a glimpse of everything. And it was absolutely just madness. I mean, it was 108 years worth of weight being lifted off the shoulders and done so with very cold champagne and beer. And it was certainly a wet scenario, because it was, you know, certainly a joyous occasion where everybody was just getting spraying anybody that was around them as best they could. And fortunately, I needed to shoot, so I couldn't wear goggles. So I got plenty of it in my eyes, and champagne does sting considerably. but it was, a sweet sting at that, because, there were some great pictures and great moments just to watch the guys, the way that they would, you know, pay toast to Kyle Schwarber for how he's fought back this season, the rehab, and then be able to get back and get cleared at least a hit before the start of the series, and where they dumped everything on him, and then the toast they made for David Ross for wearing the jersey for the last time, and in doing so, hitting a home run, which also made him the oldest player in World Series history to ever hit a home run in the game. So that was certainly a special moment. Theo, the way everybody kind of rallied around him, and then Bill Murray showed up doing some interviews for Fox. So that was pretty neat, especially to watch Theo spray him in the face from very close range. It seemed like almost like a full bottle, but Bill took it like a man, and they certainly had a nice moment after that. But then to kind of make my way back out to the clubhouse after being in there for a while, and back out to the dugout, rather, and other players out there at that point with their families and stuff like that, and just kind of seeing them celebrate, but also the media was still out there, and then to walk out of the dugout and still see probably several thousand fans that had still hung on and crowded behind the dugout just to continue celebrating was something else. I mean, I've seen and documented some celebrations in my life, although I've never been inside an A&M football locker room when they do the big water celebration. I've certainly still got that on the list that I want to experience at some point. But, this one was certainly something I'll never forget.
Visiting with professional photographer Andrew Hancock. Again, he's fighting Texas Aggie class of 2003. Does tremendous work. ESPN, Sports Illustrated, all the big stuff, talking about his experience at the World Series. Andrew, I feel like we could talk to you all day long about all the cool stuff that you've done. We might have to do a podcast sometime in the near future where you're the only thing that we talk about or the only person that we talk to, because I think we could spend that much time on it. But, man, really do appreciate you taking a few minutes out of your day to talk to us. And really enjoy your work, and thank you so much for stopping by.
My pleasure, guys. Appreciate the kind words, and thanks for having me.
All right, guys, we will take a quick break. When we come back, we're on to the college football pick'em side of things. Again, you're listening to the My Aggie Nation podcast.
What goes up must fall to the ground. That high that you're flying, you'll be riding it down. What goes up must fall to the ground. Must fall to the ground. Must fall to the ground.
Every time I find that I'm in something really good, I know that it's gonna fade.
And we have come to that point, that juncture in the podcast in which we are going to be picking all of the hot games for this weekend, the college football pick'em section. And yes, we have the one, the only Big Hush joining us. Rapper extraordinaire, as well as graphic designer extraordinaire from up here, but mainly rapper extraordinaire. We'll give him that. But he's going to be helping us pick this week. And Travis, we got a lot to live up to, because when we look at it overall, you are in the lead. Whatever, you can gloat, you can enjoy your moment if you'd like. I give you 5 seconds.
As a first year picker, I'm not allowed to talk to the media.
Okay, that was even less than 5 seconds. That works. So you're 37-20 overall. I am 34-23. The guests are 34-23. So hopefully I whip Hush's fanny and I can catch you sometime this week throughout some of these picks. Now, we got a lot of good games coming up, obviously. We'll get to Ole Miss at Texas A&M here in a second. A Big Ten matchup, Minnesota at Nebraska. What say you, Travis?
Minnesota is a sneaky good team. They have they're moving their way up and into the polls. You know, Kirk Herbstreit was real high on the Golden Gophers last night on that ESPN selection show. But you know, while Nebraska wasn't, you know, Ohio State caliber in their play, I think they're still a pretty legitimate program and have kind of worked their way back into that national spotlight. Give me GBR, go Big Red.
You know, that's a team that has almost lost to a bad Oregon team. You know, Nebraska got absolutely whipped last week. Granted, they were at the Horseshoe. They're going to be at home this week. But I tell you what, I think I agree with Herbie a little bit on this one. I think the Golden Gophers are coming for you, baby. I think they're coming for the Big Red. They're going to finally expose them. I don't know if Tommy Armstrong's going to be all the way healthy. I think the Golden Gophers pull off the upset. And Nebraska is ranked at 19th. There is no line on this game yet. At least ESPN has not put one out. But should be interesting. 6:30 kick in Lincoln. But I've got the Golden Gophers. Big Hush.
Yes, sir.
What say you, sir?
I'm going to go with Nebraska because I don't like Minnesota accents.
Well, that's just, you're just being a hoser. You're just being a hoser then.
Don't you know?
I think that's probably Canadian, but it's all the same.
Go to Tim Hortons. That might be too Canadian, but, you know, whatever.
Oh, I didn't think about it. What if Coach, College Station Spirit, head coach Nick Beadall is listening in and he thinks we already made fun of that.
I've seen Nick Beadall fight.
I'm not going to be making fun of him at any time. So, Coach, if you're listening in, we sincerely apologize. Travis made me do it. Another game that we got coming up. This is a Big 12 showdown in Norman. Baylor at number 11, Oklahoma.
I mean, I think Baylor was exposed a little bit last week in that 62-22 beatdown by the Horned Frogs in Waco. You know, Oklahoma has an outside chance. Oklahoma is my dark horse to make it into that top four. They're a very, very dark horse, you know, outside chance. But there is a glimmer of hope, and I think that glimmer stays ignited as they move past Baylor. Give me the Sooners. Boomer Sooner.
As much as it may pay me to say this, I'm looking at this game, and Baylor has absolutely no chance to win this. None whatsoever. They're going to Norman. Joe Mixon will be back. Whatever he did to that parking attendant apparently was only bad enough for one game suspension. And so he'll be back with Oklahoma. They've got Baker Mayfield. He's going to be firing on all cylinders. There won't be much defense played from either team. But at this point, yeah, from watching them last week, that TCU was able to come into your house. Granted, it is Waco. It is Baylor, whatever house that might be, a cesspool. That they were able to come in and just throttle the Bears on their home field. That really spoke volumes as to this team is not the same under Jim Grobe as it was Art Briles. So I'm going to take the Sooners. Hush. Do the Bears have any hope? Are you going to go with Baylor on this one?
I have no idea, Zach, but thank you for asking. As much as I want to go with the Texas team, I have family up in Oklahoma. So for this pick, I'll just go with them.
I didn't make things interesting. I didn't even know your Oklahoma family was Oklahoma fans. Aren't they Texas?
They certainly aren't, but I don't know if they're Baylor fans.
Who is outside of Waco?
Exactly. And so, this is a tough one, but I'll go with Oklahoma.
All right, so all three of us going Boomer Sooner on this one. We got Oklahoma beating the Baylor Bears. Another Big 12 matchup. We got West Virginia, the 16th ranked I was about to say Volunteers, Mountaineers. I knew it was one of those double ears. E-R. Yeah, one of those ears. They're heading into Austin to take on Charlie Strong in Texas. Of course, Texas coming off a big win last week that I called, by the way. Thank you very much, at Texas Tech. This is an interesting pick, especially considering it is in Austin. Texas is a 2-point favorite right now.
I was about to ask you what that spread was You know, I'm going to start out with the fact that Texas Tech really disappointed me this year. I thought Texas Tech could muster just like some iota of defense and really make a challenge for that Big 12 title this year with Patrick Mahomes and some of the stuff they've been able to do in offense. And yet, they lost to Texas. This still is not a good Texas team. Now we're going to get more weeks of this weird Charlie Strong limbo because he like kind of loses a lot, but then kind of also wins a little bit, and it's really weird. But give me Texas in that. No, excuse me. Give me West Virginia in that one.
You got West Virginia. Well, you just did like a 180 in half a millisecond.
Right. I was talking about Texas, and then I said Texas and went, oh, crap, no. I didn't want to pick Texas. I wanted to pick West Virginia, so I picked West Virginia.
So you got Dana Holgorsen and maybe even Baby Holgorsen coming in. You got Skylar Howard coming back to his home state. I'm gonna agree with you on this one too. Dadgummit, I'm gonna agree that West Virginia is gonna come in and they're gonna roll. I have no idea why Texas is a 2-point favorite. They've done nothing to make you think that other than beating a terrible, awful, no good Notre Dame team. They beat Texas Tech last week. Well, guess what, buddy? This ain't Texas Tech, and it may be in Austin, but it doesn't give you that big of an edge. I think West Virginia is gonna go in and absolutely crucify Texas in this game.
Burn that couch, Zach. Burn it.
Hey, you know what?
He's lighting the match in the room as we speak.
And look, you can't call me a horn hater, even though that it may or may not be able to be applied in this case. But, you know, Texas, I picked them to win last week, and they won big. But this week, they're not going to get it done. And for some odd reason, I don't know why, Vegas is picking Texas to win. They're not going to do it. But hush, maybe you can save the horns and Charlie Strong.
Yeah, let me be the odd man out here, and I'll go with Texas.
Okay.
I'll do it.
I like it. Man likes to live dangerously.
Yes, sir.
You're like James Bond, but with better sideburns.
Hey,
so you
thanks.
Got that going for you. All right, so we've got two for West Virginia, one for the University of Texas. An SEC showdown in Athens, Georgia. It's number 9 Auburn, who has really come on gangbusters of late, at the Georgia Bulldogs. It may not be as big of a wipeout as a lot of people think. When you're looking at the line right now, it's 10.5 points in the favor of the Auburn Tigers. But, you know, Georgia's at home, and Kirby Smart is pretty smart when it comes to defense and slowing down Auburn.
Here's the thing. I'm gonna go full disclosure on this one. When it's all said and done, I would sure like to see the Fighting Texas Aggies in the Cotton Bowl. I'm a Dallas guy. It would be nice to go home and see my family. I heard that the Cotton Bowl also treats the media types pretty well.
Chocolate milk every day. As much chocolate milk as you can drink.
I like chocolate milk.
I love chocolate.
I want more chocolate milk in my life. I want the Cotton Bowl. And if that's gonna happen, Auburn needs to keep winning. That's plain and simple. So, for the reason of chocolate milk, I pick Auburn.
Wow. Okay, so you got Auburn going on the road, defeating the Georgia Bulldogs. Interesting. Hush. What
Georgia?
Say you?
Georgia.
Oh, sing it. Sing it. Sing it, brother Hush.
We'll go Georgia.
Ooh, interesting pick.
Let's
you know
what? Happens.
You know what? Just because you sang that so beautifully and so sweetly, I as well am going to go with the Bulldogs.
My man.
Boom!
So easily swayed.
I kind of was thinking in the back of my head, you know what? I bet something that would really turn over the apple cart in this situation would be if Georgia was somehow able to stop this Auburn train that has been going ever since the loss to A&M. And I think that Georgia has the capability to knock off somebody. They're going to get a good win somewhere. Who it's against, we don't know. I think that it's going to happen this weekend. Now, it very well easily could be an Auburn blowout, but I think Georgia might have a chance. So I'm going to go ahead and go with the dogs there. I'm going to go with Hush. Another SEC showdown, LSU at Arkansas. Two teams I think are somewhat similar in a lot of ways. They both like to run the ball a whole heck of a lot. LSU coming off a disappointing loss to Alabama at home. Offense did absolutely nothing. Leonard Fournette couldn't do anything. But, again, that's Alabama. They're going to be taking on Arkansas this week. They're coming off a big win. Who you got?
You know, I've wanted to be really high on Arkansas all season. Everywhere I've looked, Arkansas has been not a favorite in these games. And they've lost some. They've lost to Alabama. They've lost a few games here down the stretch. I think LSU is just going to be a little bit demoralized, dropping that far all the way to 24 after losing to the number one team in the nation. A&M lost to the number one team in the nation, and in the AP poll, they stayed in the exact same spot.
Yeah.
So I think this is an LSU team that's just going to be a little bit demoralized, and I like the passing game in with Austin Allen that Arkansas has. Give me the Hogs.
Ooh.
Pig Suey.
Woo Pig Suey for you. I'm looking at this matchup, and I'm seeing two teams that, as I talked about, are somewhat similar. LSU has Leonard Fournette on their side, but this game is in Fayetteville. This game is at night. Just like it is in Death Valley, things get weird in Fayetteville at nighttime. It's going to be 6 o'clock. The sun's going to be going down before then, as I've been prone to realize since I work till 6 o'clock. Now when I leave, it's dark outside. LSU is a 7-point favorite in this game. I think that is far too high. I'm going to take LSU. It almost hurts in order to shoot that out there. I think it's going to be a slugfest. I think it'll be a low-scoring game. I can see LSU squeaking it out 24-21, something like that. It could go either way. But I'm going to go LSU. I'm going with the Tigers, going on the road, getting the win over Arkansas. Hush.
Zach, your Halloween costume has swayed me on this one. I don't know how many of your listeners saw that.
I don't know if we even tweeted that out. Yeah, but I went as the one, the only John Daly for Halloween.
If you didn't see it, you got to see it. And, yeah, wearing that Arkansas shirt, that sells me on this one. So, going with the Razorbacks.
What are all my fans going to do now that they know that I betrayed who John Daly truly is, which is a Razorback through and through?
Just buy them a frozen iced tea lemonade with vodka. What is that, a John Daly?
Yeah, it's a Arnie Palmer plus vodka.
Yeah, and frozen, sure. Isn't it?
I don't know. Whenever I've had it, it wasn't frozen.
Okay.
And apparently a friend of mine who plays a lot of golf made it for me, so I would trust her
over. There you go.
So, anyways, whatever it is, it's got some kind of alcohol in it, obviously, if it's a John Daly. Looking over things, we'll get to Travis here at the end of this big Ole Miss at Texas A&M showdown. The Aggies coming off a disappointing loss to Mississippi State. Lost Trevor Knight, what seems to be the foreseeable future. Maybe back in time for a bowl game, but he ain't going to be back this Saturday. Meanwhile, Ole Miss has also had their quarterback troubles. Chad Kelly out for the rest of the season. And they're going to be having a backup. We're not for sure who that is going to be playing. It will probably be Jason Perellin. But looking at this game, Pellerin, Texas A&M is coming back to Kyle Field off a very, very disappointing loss, obviously. Everybody is questioning their motives. Everybody is questioning how good they really are, their fight. I think they're going to come out, they're going to be angry. And they have a very good matchup against an Ole Miss team that has struggled to stop the run. Jake Kubenek will have a safety net, and Travion Williams as well as Keith Ford back there in the backfield. And I think A&M is going to run it right down their throats. I think they're going to be successful at it, and the defense is going to be better against an inexperienced quarterback. I've got the Aggies rolling in this one. Hush.
All right, I'm not going to risk my health, so I'm sticking with the home team, playing it safe, and that'll be that.
And you're gonna be working this game as well, right? I mean, you're gonna be hanging up there with all the bigwigs up in the suites.
I'll be up
so
in the suites.
You gotta make sure that you keep yourself on your best behavior and be rooting Aggies all the way.
Yeah, I can't be wearing Ole Miss colors up there.
No, I can't be doing none of that.
Well, a lot will be said here about Ole Miss's run defense. You know, they're ranked last in the SEC in run defense. A&M has some decent running backs, Travion Williams and Keith Ford. They haven't really been able to put it together as of late, but one of those games was Alabama, and you know that's one of the best defensive fronts in the country. But here's the thing, too. Ole Miss is only 8th in pass defense in the SEC. That's middle of the road. It's not like they're just the most standout pass defense in the country. Jake Kubenek's going to throw for a ton of yards and a ton of touchdowns in this game. Ole Miss is not, you know, I really circled this game because I thought this would be a tough game with both teams at full strength for A&M to come out there and win in a shootout. I thought they would have to win in a shootout to beat this Ole Miss team with Chad Kelly in there. Well, Chad Kelly's not there anymore, and I think now Ole Miss is to be able to win is going to have to win a shootout game, or else A&M is going to run all over them with the passing game, with the arm of Jake Kubenek. That's what's going to happen. A&M for the win. in the game this weekend. Well, everyone, thanks so much for joining us. That is our show for this week. A&M goes out there and faces Ole Miss at Kyle Field. The return to Kyle Field after a long little home stretch in here in the middle of the season. And they are at home the remainder of the season. So go out and check out that game. A big thanks to Big Hush here for picking games with us. Also, a big thanks to Davis Potter of the Oxford Eagle, as well as Andrew Hancock, former Aggie, and just photographer extraordinaire out there doing big things in the sports world. We'll be back next week to talk a little bit of UTSA, or probably talk a little other things than UTSA, because let's be real, it's UTSA, but there's an Ole Miss game first. Go out there and check that out, and come back with some great insight and analysis on the remainder of the A&M season. Until that point, for Zach Taylor, I'm Travis Brown. Thanks so much for listening to the My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way to must have it seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't needs a girl, we know that's true. If we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't wanna make sure that we'll be on.